This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. You know, you read these stories, or maybe you've been in this situation yourself, stories about a company that's laying off workers even though it's successful, and the CEO gets a huge bonus. Or there's a factory that closes while the product it makes seems to be profitable. And you read that, and it seems like something doesn't quite add up. Our explainer-in-chief on the corporate world is Sheila Kolhatkar, a staff writer who covers business for The New Yorker, and Sheila says that those stories about cost-cutting often have to do with what's called activist investors.
When you talk to CEOs now and senior executives at companies, everyone is worrying about activists. They are all worried about being targeted by an activist investor.
Now, if this isn't your world, let's do a little clarification. When Sheila says activist investor, she's not talking about some kind of socially responsible do-gooder. An activist investor is something else entirely.
They're usually investors at hedge funds who buy up shares in a publicly traded company and then go to that company and try and influence the people running the company to make changes so that the stock price goes up. By definition, activist investing is a little bit adversarial and a little uncomfortable. And some activist investors who are very famous, you know, really terrify corporate America. People are literally shaking when they get a call from that particular fund. But it's basically the talk of corporate America.
So the activist investors often pit themselves against the CEOs. But this is more than just a squabble among the 1%. These fights over the management of public companies have consequences for all of American business, for our products and our jobs. Here's Sheila Kolhatkar.
One person who really helped me understand all of this from the perspective of a CEO is Ron Shaich, the founder and former CEO of Panera Bread, the fast casual restaurant chain. He was really the visionary behind many of the big ideas that made Panera successful.
I had the best performance of any restaurant stock over the last 20 years of public company. 26% annual appreciation, 44 times the S&P 500, best performance in the restaurant industry.
Ron told me that twice during his time running Panera, activist investors came in and tried to get him to change the way he was running the company. So I wanted to start by asking you to take us back in time. It's 2007, and you had grown Panera over 20 to 30 years into one of the most successful restaurant companies in the country, and an activist investment firm called Shamrock Activist Value Fund bought a stake in your company, and they wanted you to make some changes to the business. What did they want you to change?
They wanted us to increase our prices more quickly. They thought we could drive more profitability essentially by putting more pressure on our customers.
And what did you think about that idea?
I thought the idea was short-sighted. I thought it's always easy in the short term to squeeze. But the question is, what's its price medium and long term? And what time frames are you talking about?
And did Shamrock have any other ideas for things that you could do?
Well, I basically met with them. It's usually the way the game goes. And the lead partner of Shamrock put his arm around me and said, listen, just take the advice of our young associate. We'll help you make more money more quickly. Wouldn't that be wonderful for all of us? And by the way, if you don't take my advice, we're going to make you.
So the young associate thought that he or she had some good ideas about how to run your company that maybe you hadn't thought about yourself.
Well, straight up, it doesn't take all that much to raise prices. But if you want to understand the thesis of many of these activists, the prevailing mantra has been shareholder value creation. Years ago, the average shareholder held their share of a company on average for 8 years. More recently, the average shareholder rents that stock for 8 months. They're really renting it for its economic impact. And the result is we've changed the way in which our companies are operating. You increasingly have our CEOs and our boards making short-term decisions, trying to assuage their shareholders. And in a world in which what used to be the prevailing mantra, we had a responsibility to our communities and a responsibility to our guests, as well as our shareholders, we've increasingly moved to a world that says the only thing that matters is whether I can pop that stock next week. And boy, I'll tell you, that's bad for our companies, that's bad for our economy, and it's ultimately bad for our country.
So you spent your career building Panera. You started out as the manager of one bakery in Boston. Can you tell me a bit about the cookie jar?
Sure. It was. I always wanted to create the company I wanted to work in. I opened a single little store in 400 square feet in downtown Boston. I then merged that in with a company called Au Bon Pain, which was going through its own series of problems. I then ran that company over the course of 36 years, ultimately selling it as Panera. We had changed its name along the way, but I sold it in a $7.8 billion transaction, the largest U.S. restaurant deal ever done.
Can you give me some examples of long-term decisions you made that allowed you to build Panera into your vision for serving this market?
Well, sure. In 1993, we, Au Bon Pain Co. Inc., bought a 19-store chain called St. Louis Bread Company. We then took 2 years, 1994 and 1995, studying the marketplace. And in the early to mid-90s in the food business, you could feel a significant niche of the marketplace that wanted to feel special in a world in which they weren't. And we began to imagine what kind of place would have real food, would have environments that engaged you, would have people that cared. That became another niche called fast casual. And today that niche is a $50 billion niche of the fast food industry. It took us then 3 years, 96, 97, and 98, to make the changes that allowed us to rename the St. Louis Bread Company Panera. Quite frankly, our stock was flat for 3 years. And the truth is, if we were trying to do that in 2019, I doubt we ever could have gotten it done.
What do you think would have happened if you tried today to make all of those big business transformations you just described?
That's exactly why I sold my company. Because the truth of the matter is, Panera's greatest competitive advantage, its ability to make these long-term transformative bets, was at great risk. And I ultimately made the decision that we were far better removing the company from the public markets and returning it to the private market. And that by doing so, Panera would have the capability to protect its long-term competitive advantage. You may know, I was on the board of Whole Foods. Whole Foods was one of the most successful retailers of the last 25 years.
I love Whole Foods.
And yet, 2 to 3 years ago, the environment around Whole Foods was beginning to change. You had companies like Aldi and Lidl coming in from Europe, like Trader Joe's. Whole Foods needed to evolve. But within 2 quarters, activists showed up. We were told, hey, you either fix it in 3 months or we're going to basically call for John Mackey, our CEO's retirement. And the reality is that Whole Foods was forced into a position where selling to Amazon was the best scenario. What do you think Amazon is doing different with Whole Foods than Whole Foods would have done on its own? Nothing. The only difference is the capital structure and the ability of Amazon to make long-term decisions. You want to know what creates competitive advantage? It's the ability to make long-term decisions, which is why our public markets are under such huge pressure and so many companies are running from the public markets as opposed to the public markets.
So basically, Whole Foods wouldn't have been given the time by its shareholders to make these changes that it is now able to make because it's under the safe umbrella of Jeff Bezos and Amazon.
The point I'm trying to make is not simply that the activists are the problem. The activists are not the problem in and of themselves. The activists are the byproduct of a pervasive sense of short-termism that's informed our marketplaces. Why is that? It starts with our active money managers are incentivized on short-term pressure. Add to that the liquidity in the market in the sense that there's no value in being in for the long term. And you have a situation in which there's increasing pressure for short-term results. Activism arises from that condition.
So what are the stakes in this battle? It's not just about you, and it wasn't just about Panera. What is sort of the larger fight that's taking place here?
When we live in a world where you have very short-term thinking, the result of it is the only kind of initiatives CEOs and boards will consider is short-term initiatives. What does that mean? Cost-cutting. We're not getting the innovation. We're also, frankly, doing damage across the country, and there's an ultimate implication to that. If you're in Michigan and you're in a factory, and that factory is owned by a company that was just taken over by activist investors, and that company makes a decision to cut jobs, who do you think ends up being at the loss? Guys like me, gals like me have done phenomenally well since the Great Recession. That hasn't really happened for middle America. The benefits haven't been shared. And I think most people have a sense of the problem. They know this isn't fundamentally working for a better country. We want better decisions. We've got to fix this problem. And there are remedies to do it. We can begin by looking at differential holding periods for shareholders. We want to reward those that have long-term holding periods or at least give them different influence in the decision-making. Secondly, we've got to look at compensation schemes. We want to reward long-term performance. The time to worry about a heart attack is not in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. If you don't deal with these kinds of problems before they occur, you cannot fix it. And I don't care whether you're talking about our politics. I don't care about whether you're talking about our economy. We have become pervasively more short-term. And unless we call that out, and unless we go to work to drive structural reforms to change that, this is not going to lead to a good place. We get it. We've got to solve it.
Ron Shaich, the former CEO of Panera Bread and a restaurant investor. He spoke with The New Yorker's Sheila Kolhatkar.